Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
The Me Too movement may be shaking up business and entertainment and politics, but change has been slow in coming to corporate boards. Two-thirds of all the corporate board seats on Fortune 500 companies are held by white men, and believe it or not, that represents progress. By the way, NPR's board of directors is made up of 35 people. 19 are men, 16 are women. So why have boards been so slow to bring in more women and people of color? And how does a more diverse board shape a company's performance? I'm going to ask those questions and more to Elizabeth Stapp. She teaches courses on business ethics at the University of Colorado Boulder. And she's with us today from Boulder, Colorado. And Elizabeth, welcome. It's really good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So are these underwhelming stats on the number of women and people of color on corporate boards, is it basically the result of inertia? Is it something more intentional? Why has the progress been so slow?
It's a combination of both. First, I think most boards recognize the significance of diversity on their boards and speak to the importance of diversity on boards. However, there's some systemic issues in getting people into those seats. One problem is a lot of boards of directors, when they're looking for incumbents, they want people who have already been serving as a CEO. And when you look at the amount of diversity, or I should say lack of diversity in the CEO position of a corporation, the numbers are abysmal. It's under 4%
wow.
of CEOs are women or diverse candidates. So the pool from which boards are historically drawing is limited, and the supply is limited. But that then begs the question, why are we looking only at that pool?
Right.
And should we improve the process?
What's the answer to that?
I think the answer is you have to look broader. There's implicit bias in the selection process. And even though boards are seeing this as a significant issue, there's also a reluctance to go beyond what they historically deem as being qualified for a board. So we have to move beyond that. We have to expand the scope of where we're searching for potential board members. Also, there's a problem of turnover on boards. Board seats are seen as sort of a lovely place to retire for former executives, and it's an ego position, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So even though we've made some strides and the numbers are improving, they've gotten, in the U.S. at least, somewhat stagnant, and we've been hovering around 20%. We're not seeing the amount of growth continuing. It has moved over the past few years from about 16 to 20% for female representation, but then we've hit sort of an impasse. And part of that goes to the supply issue that I just spoke about, but the other part is people are reluctant to retire from boards. And boards are historically not so strong in self-assessment or imposing term limits on the seats.
And people are reluctant to retire because it's a pretty good gig. You make a nice
yeah.
little income there, and you get to circulate with people you know, that have the kind of experience you have. It's a sweet gig.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a relatively prestigious position. A lot of the people who serve on the board become close friends of yours. But that then also demonstrates a problem. Of this groupthink. People become too familiar with each other. They become more friendly than perhaps they should. I mean, there's certainly some benefits in being able to work as a team, but when that teamwork trumps their responsibility, that's when it becomes problematic. And what's interesting about female and diverse candidates who sit on boards is the data shows that they tend to be much more positive in terms of their monitoring and oversight responsibilities. So they're much more willing to speak out against the groupthink if they see problems with a CEO or a high-profile person within the company.
I saw an interesting survey from McKinsey that found this connection between companies that lead on racial and ethnic diversity are 35% more likely to have a higher financial performance than the national average. So there is objective evidence that diversifying the company and the leadership, and then by connection, the board, can improve financial performance. I wonder how far away we are from people believing that enough to, you know, to make these changes.
Right. And that's the problem. I think it was hard to get research, at least initially, to connect diversity and female representation of a board with performance. Initially, the evidence was mixed. However, now we're starting to see conclusive research, or at least modest research, demonstrating that having diversity on the board improves return on assets, and there is a direct tie to improved performance. Now, again, that then, even if you can sell that position, which shouldn't be a hard sell because it's data-driven, there are some issues in how the board is currently structured, how often people are moving and rotating off the board, and how willing the board is to actually do anything to support their position that diversity matters. So when polled, board members say, yes, diversity matters. It's significant to the operation of the company. Well, that's great, and 90% of board members would agree with that. But then when you pull the curtain and look at what they're actually doing, and if they're making diversity a priority, they're not.
Right. Are there companies that you would say are really the model for opening up and seeing the change that's coming and embracing some of these suggestions that you've had about how to bring more diversity in?
I think HP has made great strides on that. They're one of the leaders in terms of board diversity. Particularly nonprofits, interestingly enough, are making great strides. As you can see with the NPR board, they had a very diverse board compared to a for-profit business. There are a lot of reasons for that, but it has to be pointed out that the NPR board certainly moved a lot more swiftly with the Garrison Keillor issue than, let's say, other publicly traded corporations. Now, granted, there's some differences in organizational structure, but regardless, I think nonprofits have made a lot of headway in that space, as has HP.
I think I hear you saying that because there were, and again, the split here is 35 people on the board here at Minnesota Public Radio, 19 men, 16 are women. I think I hear you saying that it may have been the presence of a number of those women in these consultations to decide what to do with the Keillor situation that might have made the difference. Are you concluding that?
I don't think I can conclude that it's necessarily gender. It's more the indication of the board's willingness to consider other issues. You know, you can have a diverse perspective from an all-white male board. It really depends on who's sitting in those seats. So what you want to avoid is just tokenism, having someone who is a woman sitting on the board but doesn't have the relative power or sway in the room, or who's been shut down through the rest of the board members. It seems as though, certainly there's a correlation between the diversity of the NPR board and their ability to move swiftly. I think it also depends on who those people are. And I would suggest at least that those people, the diverse candidates on the NPR board certainly had their voice when discussing this issue, just because of how quickly they acted. It was relatively rapid compared to some publicly traded corporations that have faced similar issues.
Elizabeth Stapp teaches courses on business ethics at the University of Colorado Boulder, and she was with us today from Boulder to talk about diversity on boards. Hey, Elizabeth, thank you so much. Really good to have your view on this.
Thank you.